Thank you very much, Rabbi Posey. Bershut, the Mor Da'atra. It's a pleasure, first of all, to share Torah with you, and enjoyed our conversation earlier today. Dr. Schluss, who's with us, I have the opportunity to work with Dr. Schluss's son. We're colleagues together at the Center for the Jewish Future. He's doing unbelievable work in training and in being in charge of our rabbinic intern program around the country. And I'd also like to acknowledge two additional individuals. First of all, my colleague, Rabbi Schechter, who came with me from Yeshiva University, and a good friend of mine who we have spent, we went through Tiferes Moshe, Chavetz Chaim, and Shalavim with, Shlomo Horowitz. It's a pleasure to, it was worth coming down just to see him again. And I want to thank dear Rabbi Posey for really putting together this entire Kolo Yom Rishon program, and really the entire Shabbat. It's been really a very special Shabbat. I had the opportunity to share words of Torah and have conversations and benefit from a lot of your wisdom. And I appreciate spending Shabbos with you here in Baltimore. And to hear that next time, while you will be down here, you'll have a real Talmud Chacham, Rav Schechter, who's really Gadol B'Yisrael. It's a special opportunity. The truth is that Rabbi Schechter right now is at a Aguna rally, and actually stepped out of davening during davening because I got an email. My children told me I need to be on BlackBerry Anonymous. I got this email that all these YU students, all of a sudden, Rabbi Schechter announced that there's a Sichas Musar at YU every Wednesday night, and it's a rotation of the Rosh Yeshiva, and some of us also are part of that group. We give these Sichas Musars every Wednesday night for like 20 minutes. Rabbi Schechter announced that he's going to a rally, an Aguna rally. We have a group of young men who have an organization called ORA. For a host of legal reasons, most I don't understand, but enough to understand that YU's deep pockets should not be compromised. ORA is a separate 501c3, but it's really run through YU, and it's gotten in the past 2.5 years 60 gittin by doing rallies all over the United States. These guys are relentless. They, you know, once Rabbi Schechter gives them the green light that they can do the rally, they're relentless. So in addition to going to university, in addition to not compromising Seder, B'makom She'en Yom Ve'en Laila, they do these rallies. So this rally is actually in front of a Beis Din in Borough Park that gives out Heter Me'er Rabbanim, the permission for a man to marry a second woman, gives them out faster than you will consume the food on this table. And therefore, there's a rally actually in front of the head of that Beis Din today. So I actually stepped out of davening because I heard all these additional students were going. I wanted to make sure that there was some police there to make sure that Rabbi Schechter and students don't get arrested in any way, shape, or form. So Mirz Hashem, he'll be here in a month, and I'm sure that your Torah that you'll hear from him will be unbelievable. And it's really nice when you have Gadol B'Yisrael, which Rav Schechter, he really is a Gadol B'Yisrael. Not only can he give teach Torah on any topic, the fact that he's willing to dedicate the morning to be involved in these rallies, as important as it is to help that particular Aguna, the hundreds of YU students who see Rav Schechter doing that, and the vision and the leadership that he provides to them by doing something like that, in my opinion, it's as important as any Rav Chaim he'll teach them today, is that leadership that he'll show them. So I have the opportunity to share with you some words of Torah on a very important topic, and that is the notion of PGD and genetic screening. PGD, as Rabbi Posey, as probably Dr. Posey could explain better than me, and that is that PGD is pre-implantation genetic diagnosis. What it basically is the following. First of all, how many doctors are there in this room before I... Okay. All right, so I apologize in advance, but I'll try to make sure I get the science correct also. Pre-implantation genetic diagnosis is the following. In the when a couple cannot actualize the dream of having a family through the natural intimate ways, one can decide to use various fertility procedures. There's a procedure called IUI, intrauterine insemination. There are other procedures of all different ilks that help deal with certain challenges, either female fertility challenges, male fertility challenges, sometimes when the couple has challenges together. And then there's a process called IVF or ICSI IVF. We're not going to go through the differences of what IVF is and what ICSI IVF is, but there is this notion of in vitro fertilization. And what happens is that you harvest eggs and you express sperm, and you deal with all the challenges, halakhic challenges that go in both of those situations. And there's much halakhic information that has been written on both those issues. A few weeks ago, there was a medical ethics conference at Yeshiva University where I dealt with this for like an hour and a half with Dr. Richard Grazi, who's one of the experts in this area, the ABCs of infertility. We spent an hour and a half going through all the halakhic issues of this issue. But the bottom line is you take the egg, you take the sperm, and in a laboratory, in vitro fertilization, you fertilize the egg in the laboratory itself. And normally you return the egg in the blastocyst stage of development when the egg is 3 or 4 days old from a fertilized perspective. You return it back to the womb of the woman, the surrogate, or the woman itself who the egg was harvested from. And what happens is hopefully the egg takes root in the endometrial lining of the uterus. And then what happens is the egg grows, develops, and 9 months later one has a child or children. What happens if there are some additional challenges that the couple has? Let's say, for example, that the family has children that carry, they're both Tay-Sachs carriers. And so they do an in vitro fertilization, but they want to return fertilized eggs that don't have the challenge of the disease of Tay-Sachs. Or let's say, I'll give you another example, which is a totally opposite end of the example. But this is the question I got on Israeli television once, and thank God I spent enough years in the rabbinate to realize how not to answer a question very fast. And that is, especially when you have to answer in Hebrew, and that is, what happens if in the following situation? This is a true story. In Ne'esharim, there was a couple, and I'm not trying to be chas v'shalom prejudicial in any way, stereotypical in any way. This is the story. So I'm just saying it as it is. So what happens in the following situation? You have an Ne'esharim, a couple that has tried to have children for a very long period of time, but has been unable to. There's a whole machlokas amongst the poskim about how many years you need to wait before you start using these procedures. Rav Shlomo Zalman is pretty makil in that. He doesn't have a year's. Other poskim say you have to have a certain amount of years before you do these procedures. So the couple waited the requisite amount of years according to the most stringent approaches, or maybe the most lenient approaches, because they weren't able to fulfill the mitzvah of Pur Ravu until they passed those years. And what happened was, they find out the husband has no sperm. So they're going to use a sperm donor based on the tshuvas of Rav Moshe Feinstein, and actually an article by Rav Shlomo Zalman in the first volume of Noam, which is a periodical that no one's ever heard of. That's why Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach's house was not firebombed when he wrote the tshuva that you could use non-Jewish sperm, and Rav Moshe Feinstein's house was firebombed when he wrote the tshuva that you could use non-Jewish sperm, because everyone reads the Igros Moshe. Very few people have heard of the periodical Noam, and Rev Shlomo Zalman wrote his response on this issue in Noam, the first volume. And what happens is they use non-Jewish sperm. But since they use non-Jewish sperm, and this guy from Ne'esharim is a Kohen, the child is a Yisrael. So they do the IVF procedure, the in vitro fertilization procedure, and the guy says, I only want girls. I do not want any boys. Why? Because what happens is that the child, after bar mitzvah, is going to be called up to the Torah, and in Eretz Yisrael, he's actually going to have to duchen on a regular basis. He doesn't want to explain to everybody in the shul that he used non-Jewish sperm in order to be able to get this child. So he only wants girls. He doesn't want boys. And with PGD, pre-implantation genetic diagnosis, in the blastocyst stage of development, in that time in which you only have three or four, that the egg has only developed in this, you know, 3 days or so, you basically can just pull out one of, you can just pull out a slice of the fertilized egg and basically do genetic testing on that. It grows back. It doesn't hurt it in any way, shape, or form. And therefore, he wants only girls returned, and he wants the fertilized male eggs discarded. What does halacha say about that? And in Israel, actually, it was the second question, because PGD is covered in certain situations, like the Tay-Sachs case. Should the insurance companies, that was the question that they asked me on Israeli television, should the insurance companies cover a process in which you are now selecting based on male or female? Or let's say the couple only has boys, and somebody who has four boys and a princess who's the cream in the middle of that Oreo cookie, so to say. And, you know, it's nice to have a girl, you know. Baruch Hashem, the guys are great, but it's nice to have a girl. And so the bottom line is that they want to be yotze the mitzvah peruvu, so therefore they only want girls, you know, female fertilized eggs, females that will be born out of these fertilized eggs returned. Can you do that also? That's the notion of PGD, pre-implementation genetic diagnosis. Now, pre-implementation genetic diagnosis can give you more than that. You can decide what color eyes your kids are going to have. You can decide on a whole bunch of other things. So the question is, can you do this PGD, this pre-implementation genetic diagnosis, when you're involved in a procedure called IVF, this in vitro fertilization, which again means that the egg and the sperm are not fertilized in the fallopian tube, but rather fertilized in a laboratory? Does everyone understand? Did I set the stage properly? Any questions before we get into the halacha? Just want to make sure we're all on the same. Am I good? Am I good doctor-wise? Okay, yes.
The last scenario that you mentioned about having a girl, mm-hmm. Is that even a question? Is assuming that they have four naturally conceived boys?
Yeah, let's say this, that they want to use IVF in order to be able to fulfill the mitzvah per Ravu and then use PGD with it.
IVF.
Correct. They want to do that. They want to do it. It's a $14,000 procedure, at least in New York. And they want to do that in order to be able to have a girl. They want to do that. In Israel, the procedure actually is half the cost. But in America, it's around $14,000 or $15,000 procedure. And they want to do that. Can they, halachically, can they do that? It's an important question. I mean, there's several questions. There's the issue of chavala. There's a whole bunch of other issues. But I'm just focusing on the notion of PGD, pre-implementation genetic diagnosis. But that's the most extreme of cases. The cases that I'm giving you are the standard cases for Tay-Sachs, for blindness, for other things of that nature, where they don't want their children to have those challenges. And you know, you can make certain, and with PGD, you can decide which fertilized eggs have those challenges, which fertilized eggs don't have those challenges, and you can make a decision which ones to return to the womb of the woman. And there's several types of genetic disorders that you can test for. Almost all genetic disorders you can test for and decide what to return and what not to return. Or you decide that, for the reasons I gave you for the Mea Shearim case, you decide not for genetic challenges, but for social, psychological challenges. You decide also you want a male or a female child because you don't want to deal with those other issues. So what does halacha say about that? So that's our goal. And by the way, nothing that we're talking about here is Star Trek science. Rabbi, over here. He's the Rebbe of my children, so I have to teaching them a lot more Torah than I am right now. So, and they actually, my son had bar mitzvah last week, and they both used his divrei Torah, my older children, at the bar mitzvah. So I want to thank you for that also. Anyway, so the question is, what's the halacha regarding this idea of PGD, genetic screening from a Torah perspective? So are we okay? We set the stage. So let's open up our sources. Begin. Yes. That's part one of the question. Can you discard the other embryos, and can you do the procedure also? Okay. Let's look at source number one. Page number one. Page number one is simply just a quote You find in the Torah Shalema, Rav Kasher's in Vayikra, where Rav Kasher discusses this whole idea. He just quotes all of these different Mamari Chazal about how can you make sure you have a male child. So, for example, if you look at the third paragraph in the right hand side, where it says Chet Amar Rav Chi Bar Abba Amar Rav Yochanan Ko Amavil Al Yayin B'Matzei Shabbosos, anyone who makes Havdalah on wine on Matzei Shabbos, Havim Lo Banim Scharim, they're going to have male children. Or Tet, anybody who sanctifies themselves before having sexual interactions will be guaranteed to have male children. Or Yud Aleph, anyone who makes sure that their wife has pleasure during the sexual relationship will have male children. So you have all of these comments within the Mamari Chazal about how to have male children. Or the Gemara in Baba Basra. Ma yaseh adam v'yulo banim zcharim, what should a man do in order to have male children? Yefazer ma'osav laniyim, Rabbi Lezer says, you should give money to the poor. Okay, or Rabbi Yeshua says you should make sure your wife has appropriate joy through the marital relation experience. So actually, you do see that there is this idea, perhaps not as precise as using PGD, to be able to decide what type of children you want to have. But our question here is going a little bit further than that. Let's turn to the next source. The next source is a very famous Gemara in Baba Basra. It's a machlokas between Rabbi Akiva and Turnus Rufus. Rabbi Turnus Rufus was the Roman governor of Judea, and Rabbi Akiva was somebody who, despite being martyred, understood the goodness in humankind. And the argument between Turnus Rufus and Rabbi Akiva is the following. Turnus Rufus says to Rabbi Akiva, I'm going to tell you why the Jewish people are condemned to hell. They're condemned to Gehenna because they help the poor. Because suppose a king, an earthly king, incarcerated a member of a subject and said no one is to give that subject food or drink. And somebody, in a clandestine way, gave that person food and drink, and the king found out about it. Would not the king be angry? And the Jewish people are the servants of God. Ki li b'nei Yisrael v'dimhim. That the b'nei Yisrael are the servants of God. And therefore, if the Jewish people are the servants of God, you violate what God wants. God wants you to not feed. God wants this person to be poor. And you violate it by feeding this person. So then Rabbi Akiva says, well, suppose an earthly king incarcerated his child and said no one should give his child food or drink. And what you did was you gave food or drink to the king's child. Would not the king be happy? And we're called the children of God. We're the children of God. Dr. Twersky explained that this argument between Dr. Twersky's Zatzal once explained that this argument between Turnus Rufus and Rabbi Akiva is a much larger issue. The issue here, according to Dr. Twersky, is how exactly are we supposed to look at society? So Turnus Rufus is saying that we are supposed to wear the glasses of God. If God condemned a person to being poor, you have no right to interfere whatsoever. That's what Turnus Rufus says. Rabbi Akiva says, that's not the Jewish way. We don't wear the glasses of God. We see the challenges within the world. It's our responsibility to be God's partner in changing and fixing the world. The Takei Olam B'Malchut Shakai. We say it hopefully three times a day. We're involved in Tikkun Olam, in being able to fix the world. We don't wear the glasses of God. We don't look at things through a providential view. We look at them through the way we can change the world. The same thing is true regarding the idea of medicine. God has given us the gift of science. God has allowed us to afford us the opportunity through science to be able to change the status quo. So a couple that in the past could never have had children, through the gift of science, can now have children. Couples that in the past could have children that had certain challenges, perhaps through the gift of science, some of those challenges, like having a K-sex child,
can be obviated. And what Rabbi Akiva is demonstrating is the idea that we don't look at the individual where they are and say, God demanded that this individual should be like that. I have no right to interfere. We look at society and ask the question, how can we change society? How can we improve society? How can we make things better? The Meiri in Sanhedrin actually makes an unbelievable statement. The Meiri says, Kol shehu naaseh bepulat tivit eino beklak shafim. The Meiri is talking about the halachas in Sanhedrin of Avodah Zarah and the halachas of Kishuf, of magic. So he says, anything that is done through a natural process, through a process in which science has evolved, is not considered magic. Afilu, this is the Meiri, this is a Rishon, this is hundreds and hundreds of years ago. Afilu yed'u livroa bri'ut yafot shelo mizvuk hamin. Even when there will come a time in which humanity will learn how to create human beings not through a natural act of intimacy. Kemosha noda b'sifri hateva, as we know within the Kabbalistic works, she'ein hadavar nimna, that is not impossible, that will be attainable. Rasha'im la'asot, it's permitted to do that. So the Meiri, hundreds of years ago, is saying that in the Kabbalistic literature, it's already been indicated that there will be this opportunity to be able to have children not through a sexual act, namely through in vitro fertilization or something of that nature. Shekoshahu TV, anything that uses science, eno beklal kishuf, is not considered magic. Bedomel is the amro, this is what it means, koshi yeshbo mishum refua, anything that goes through the use of medicine, ein bo mishum darkei amori, is not considered a form of magic, which is forbidden, which is what darkei amori is. The bottom line here is that the purpose of my introduction, after we set this scientific stage, is that we should realize that halacha looks at medical science, and we don't run away from it, but we embrace it, and we recognize that we can use it. But with that recognition is also the notion that there can be a slippery slope. Because when you run away from science, so then it's easy to say it's all forbidden. But when you're willing to embrace it and recognize that it is a gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, celebrating the idea that Rabbi Akiva mentions, that people who are incarcerated in many different jails, and for a couple that wishes to have a child, that is a form of incarceration, and that we can redeem them through the gifts of God, science, from that incarceration, as the Meiri says, that this is not considered magic, but something that is halakhically embraced and endorsed. The challenges are, where does our role begin? Where does our role end? And this issue of how to use PGD and IVF and things of that nature, that's a really challenging issue. Those are important halakhic questions. And our goal today is, in a very brief way, just to give you a window into understanding this issue. I started getting these questions in Boca on IVF and other questions, and I really felt that I didn't have a clue how to answer them. And not only did I not have a clue of how to answer them, I couldn't even phrase the question properly to speak to my rabbi of how to answer them. So I took a sabbatical from my job around 8-9 years ago. I went to Eretz Yisrael and spent a year learning at an institute called Machon Pua, and learned the medicine, the science, the halachic things, took bechinas, sat on the Beis Din, answered shailas, and then got horah from Rav Mordechai Eliyahu on these issues and Rav Menachem Burstein, so I could understand these issues a little bit and be able to work through them and get some understanding, at least some window into how to understand these halachic issues of reproductive technology, puriyut b'halacha, reproductive technology and halacha. So our goal now is to try to set a stage, and it's important to realize that this stage, this is not like, this is really new stuff, and the stage has not totally been set. Great poskim like Rav Yashiv and others are discussing these issues. It's not yet the it's like, you know, I would compare this to somebody who's fixing their sidewalk outside, or putting in a new sidewalk. The cement is not yet dry, okay? It's not yet, this is a conversation that is in the middle of happening, and therefore you're going to hear the conversation not with any conclusions, but rather hear the issues going back and forth. Okay? Let's deal with the halachic issues first. And that is, a fertilized egg, can you discard it? Or what's its halachic status? Now, some of this I did when the Lehmans invited me to speak about stem cell research in Rabbi Silver's synagogue around a year plus ago. So we're not going to repeat that stuff. But there's one or two sources that are important for this also. And that is that the Gemara in Yevamos says the following. The Gemara in Yevamos tells us, and we pass it like that in Shulchan Aruch, and that is that we hold that a fertilized egg, until the first 40 days, is considered maya ba'alma. And that means like a sack of water. Maya ba'alma, like a sack of water. That's the source. And so page 2, the final two sources on the page, tell us that ad arba'im maya ba'almahi, until 40 days, the fertilized egg is considered like a sack of water. So much so that we paskin in the Shulchan Aruch the following way. The law is that if a woman is carrying her first child and she has a miscarriage, the halacha is that the next child that she has does not go through a pidyon haben process because it's not the first fruit of her womb. What happens if the miscarriage happened before 40 days, 40 days or earlier? Then the second child that she carries would have a pidyon haben, because it's not yet considered that she had the fruit of the womb yet. Sorry. Okay. We won't tell our rabbinical students I made that mistake. And that is, you hear that, Rob? Anyway, so the bottom line is that it's not considered the fruit of the womb. And therefore, I want to make sure everyone's up here. Therefore, maybe somebody will take something back from this class. Anyway, so the bottom line is that seems to be the halacha. With that perspective, it seems to be that there are many different tshuvas that discuss this issue. So if we turn to the next page of our handout, you have, for example, in Asya, the following shaila. And this crosses both ways, and let me explain it. And that is, you have various poskim, and there's a series of poskim that discuss and come to the same conclusion, so I just picked just a few of them. And that is, if you look where the asterisk is, on the next page, you have, it mentions quite quotation, Beit Cholim Tanimsa Ba'achas HaShchunot HaMarkaziot LeYehudim Charidim B'New York. This is actually talking about Maimonides. And it speaks about the Yosef Rosh there, in charge of this infertility and halacha, asked the following question. And that is that they got permission to do in vitro fertilization. What do they do with the other fertilized eggs? And he writes in there that all of the fertilized eggs, ein aleihem klal v'ikar din ubar, they don't have the status of a fetus. Ein mechalalim aleihem et haShabbat, you don't transgress the Shabbat. Umutar lizrokam im lo nivcharu lahashtala. It is permitted to throw them away, to discard them, if they have not been chosen to be implanted within the womb of the woman. V'shum she'ein din hapala elam arechem isha dafka. Because there's no halacha of any form of prohibition, of abortion, or anything else of that nature, until the fertilized egg is in the womb of the woman. Now, this halacha crosses both ways, and let me explain what I mean. Let's say that there is a IVF clinic that has a fertilized eggs in its freezer, and they are being preserved properly. And on Shabbos, there is a blackout, and for some strange reason, this lab has no backup generators, which would never happen. But let's assume that there's no backup generators, and all of a sudden, the Shomer Shabbos guy who owns the lab gets beeped that all of the frozen eggs are thawing out. Can he get into a car, drive over, and save those fertilized eggs? Now, the halacha is that a woman who is pregnant and less than 40 days in pregnancy, we still permit the woman to be driven to the hospital
you're permitted to be Mechal on Shabbos. The Rishonim asked, why is that permitted? The fertilized egg, the fetus, is less than 40 days old. It's only Maya Ba'alma. It's not yet considered a human being. It's only considered a sack of water. And the answer is, the Rishonim explain, that it's Mutter Lechal of Shabbos Achas, permitted to violate one Shabbos, in order that fertilized egg, which will eventually be a child, Kidei She Yishmeru Shabbatot Harveh, in order that fertilized egg will eventually become a human being and celebrate many Shabbatot. That's what the answer is. Once it's more than 40 days, we allow you to violate the Shabbat. It's just the pre-40 days that the Rishonim need to find some type of reason why it's 100% permitted to do. So this guy gets a beeper phone, a beeper that his lab is imploding, so to say. And can he drive over there and save those frozen eggs? So the answer is no. He cannot. Because since they're not yet within the womb of the woman, there's no status to them other than Maya Ba'alma, as just considered sacks of water. And therefore, you cannot violate the Shabbat to save those fertilized eggs. So the same way, the same halacha that endorses 120% the notion of stem cell research, that these fertilized eggs can be used for stem cell research because they don't yet have the status of a human being, and therefore it's permitted for one to be able to use them, and more than permitted, it's something that one should do, that same perspective also indicates that a fertilized egg that is within the laboratory does not yet have the halachic status of anything of a human being, of an ubar, of a fetus, and therefore you cannot be mechallel the Shabbat in order to be able to save them. This idea is also highlighted in other places. If we turn to the next page of our handout, you'll see, for example, Rav Zilberstein, in another volume of Asya, says, Otam betziot habekiot lemachla, those for eggs that have some type of machala, mutar shelo lahashtilam, it's permitted not to put them back into the womb. Umutar af lashmidam, it's permitted to destroy them. The ein bakach isur, there's no isur whatsoever. Okay? So far, we've seen the following. Since a fertilized egg in the blastocyst stage of development, or eggs that have been frozen, which are frozen at the blastocyst stage of development, is less than 40 days old, they don't yet have the status of any quasi-human being whatsoever, they don't have the status yet of a fetus, and therefore it's permitted to destroy the ones that one needs to destroy, and it's actually permitted to manipulate them to be able to save other human beings' lives through stem cell research also. But from our perspective, I wanted to answer the first issue. What about the issue of doing PGD? Let's now look at the issues. The first question is, if I check for fertilized eggs and I decide that I want to return some, and the ones that have the Tay-Sachs disease, I don't want to return and I want them to destroy, is that halakhically permitted? I think we've answered that question. Regarding returning, if a couple has once male and not female, we're going to discuss that in a few minutes. But what's clear is that there's no prohibition of destroying those fertilized eggs. The question is, does halacha endorse human beings being able to make these godly decisions of which children to return, or which future children to return, which fertilized eggs to return, and which fertilized eggs can one destroy? So, in the first discussion of this issue, you have the notion that Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach had a conversation regarding a sperm wash. A sperm wash is some way of trying to make sure that it's not as effective as PGD. Sperm wash is a way in which you try to separate the X and Y chromosomes so that you can decide which sperm fertilizes an egg, and in a way in which you can guarantee that you either have male or female children. And he had a shiloh regarding a couple that had a challenge of hemophilia, and therefore they wanted to make sure
that they only had, and this problem was only with their male children, they only wanted to have female children. So Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach says the following regarding this issue of a sperm wash. Look at the next page, number four, the left column, source, where I have line 26. Af Sarach Ian. B'shtei she'lot hanal. Ha'im lo pekagon da nemar. Perhaps in this case, when you do a sperm wash, and you're only going to be able to, you'll only create female children, because what you'll do is, you'll separate the sperm, and you'll create a way in which the fertilized egg is only hit with sperm that will create female children, and not hit with sperm that would create male children. The first question is, v'hadei kafsei d'rachman alamalach. In this arena, does human beings have the right to tread? And this is a Gemara from Brachas on Daf Yud. Because of Lihagoyin Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach Shlita, v'zeh ani maskim, I agree with you that you don't have a right to be able to decide whether you want to have male or female children based on a sperm wash. Because you're entering into a place where God decides, not where humankind should decide. That's what Shlomo Zalman says. But then he goes on further. L'umata amor le'io, amar li hagon shlita. Shlomo Zalman did say, b'zug she'yedua she'yeladehem hazcharim alulim l'sbol l'machla kashe. They know if they have male children that they will have certain challenges like hemophilia. Mutar levatzea avuram hazra'a machlutit mipal li'ishto. It's permitted to do an intrauterine insemination where you do the following, that you, for IVF, that wasn't his issue here, that you separate the sperm and you only allow the woman to become impregnated with sperm that will create female children. So Rav Shlomo Zalman, pre-PGD, Rav Shlomo Zalman was not alive for the conversation about PGD, says the following. I am concerned about the fact when you start creating male or female children, in order to be yotzei the mitzvah puruvu, in order to be yotzei, that you decide that you want to have female or male children, I am concerned about that. That is an area of God. We are junior partners with God. We don't have a right to go into that area. However, says Rav Shlomo Zalman, when you're doing this acts of science, not because you want to decide whether you have male or female children, because of any other reason other than you're worried about a machla, you're worried about some type of challenge, a medical challenge, then I permit it 100%. And he suggests here, you don't need to do something as aggressive as an in vitro fertilization, which causes much stress to the woman, that you have to harvest many eggs, you trick the body into stimulating many follicles at one time, not just one, and therefore he suggests the easier way of doing it, which accomplishes the same goal, that is, separate the sperm of the man. He's not worried about any type of shivka zera levatala here. Separate the sperm of the man and just inseminate the woman with the sperm that will create female children. Of course, this sperm wash was never 100%. Wasn't a 100% type of thing. We now have PGD, which is pretty close to 100%. So now the question is, so that's the first conversation on this issue. When this issue started to become a little bit more, a little bit became a norm from the perspective of that many of the infertility clinics that do in vitro fertilization also avail you of the opportunity to do PGD, of this pre-implementation genetic diagnosis. Rav Menachem Burstein and Machon Pua sent out a letter to many poskim around the world asking them what they feel about this issue. So they've never been printed up. I have a very strong relationship with Machon Pua and with Rav Menachem Burstein. So he sends me all of these issues on a regular basis. He carbon copies me, sends me all the letters he got back. So I, with his permission, copied the correspondences. I didn't change them. I didn't even type them up. And you'll see the question, and you'll see from Rav Nevitzal, Rav Amar, Rav Neuwitz, Rav Ariel. And the reason why I picked these, and Rav Mashash, is because I wanted Ashkenazim and Sephardim. I wanted both sides of the Zionistic aisle, so to say, and I wanted also those that represented all the different opinions. Okay? So let's read the question on page 5. First of all, how are we doing here so far? Yeah, we got a few minutes left, but we should be able to finish. How am I everyone understand? Anyone have any questions? Again, we discussed the issue. We asked the question about, we explained what PGD is. We then discussed the first concern. Our first concern was the idea of destroying the fertilized eggs, and I think we explained that. And now we're going through the final issue, and that is, where does the human being's rights and opportunities begin and end, and where should they not tread? And that's the next piece of this conversation. Okay? So, yes.
One thing that I didn't understand was the difference between this freezer lab and the situation where this is already in utero. Because the same idea about potential Shabbatot in the future seems to apply also.
Right, so the difference is the following. In the case of a lab, you're one step removed from being in the location that will nurture the fertilized egg into a human being. Right? You can't grow a human being in a lab. If that would happen, then the halacha would not change, the situation changes, and then he would be permitted to violate the Shabbos to save the lab, because then that becomes the incubator for the child. But since it's not yet has the opportunity to be the incubator for the child, and the only incubator for the child is the womb of the mother, therefore, the halacha would state that when the Rishonim permitted one to be able to violate the Shabbos for a fertilized egg below 40 days, it was only in a location where that egg could develop into a human being. In the lab, you're one step removed. Okay? Okay. So, here's the question. The question is, we only have a few minutes, so let me, I want to do this. It's not so complicated, but I want to explain it. And that is, Rav Menachem sends the poskim the following things. He says, listen, there are three ways to decide whether you have a male or a female child. The first is, do some type of diet. He says that only works 60 to 75% of the time. I don't even think it works that much. Okay?
50%
it works, right. 50% it works. Thank you, Rabbi. Okay. Second one is a sperm wash. That's bet. And that works, he says, maybe 85% of the time. And then the third one is PGD, where when it's only 8 cells, 8 ta'im, you take 1 cell out of there, and you check whether it's a boy or a girl, male or female, or you check if it has certain genetic disorders, and that works 100% of the time. It's actually a more cutting-edge way of doing PGD with the polar bodies, but we're not going to get into that right now. And he wants to know, in these cases where you can stop from making sure the child has some type of a mum, like making sure you only have male or females, or the child wants to have to be b'kayim the mitzvah per revu, one or the other, what is the halacha? And that's Rav Nachum Bernstein Shaila to the various poskim. So let's go to the next page. So Rav Nevitzal writes something here, and he says the following: La'inias daiti, the diet way is okay, because there's no hashchas zera. The second way of a sperm wash is also better than the third way. But he doesn't really comment on whether he's comfortable with PGD or not. He doesn't discuss that. Then you have Rav Amar. Rav Amar says the following. He says the diet is permitted. He goes, but this whole idea of Sharashitot Ma'od Lo Pashut, it's not so simple. We're reminding you of the Rambam and the Chinuch that writes about the prohibition of kilayim, that what this idea of creating mixed seeds is because Adam cannot be involved in changing ma'aseh bereishit, in changing creation. And therefore, kishiyesh she'ela miyuchedet, like for example, kagon harbei banot lelo banim, when you have many girls and no boys. Tzarech shela mufuretet. You need to ask more. Yitachen shiya makom lahatir b'prat shiyeh tzarech refu'i. That it should, it might be mutter when you have an issue of refuah. O kidei lahashlim puravu, or perhaps to be able to have male children when you only have female children when you only have male. O mishum shalom bayis, or if there is an issue in the family. But other than those reasons, like to organize your family, ain lahatir. I'm not so sure what other reasons there are besides refuah, puravu, or shalom bayis. But that's what he says. Okay? Let's go to the next one. Here's Rav Neuvid. Rav Neuvid is the author of Shmir Shabbos Kofasa. Tsar li sha'atem askim be'inyanim shenistarim eitanu. I am troubled that you are dealing with these issues. Tafkidem la'azor la'anashim b'inyanei ishut. Your job is to help people in issues of having, of marital issues, of having children. V'lo ba'inyanim ke'ela, not in issues like PGD. V'od anata tachim la'asot et shalanu. We have to do what we have to do. V'ashar b'dei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the rest is in God's hand. But by the way, look at what Professor Avraham and the Nishmas Avraham writes in the name of Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, and that is the hemophilia case. Just check that out also. In other words, he doesn't close the door totally. He doesn't close the door totally. Maybe for medical reasons, it can be permitted. I'm reading between the lines here. This has not been changed in any way. I just photocopied the responses. This is the way they came. I didn't take it. Some had stationery, some were just blank pages. I just took them as they were. I did not fix them in any way, which is troubling when you look at the next one because the handwriting is horrible. Okay? And that is, Rav Ariel says the same issues, and he basically says like this. If, look at the last line. If the matara is that the child should not be a balmum, should not have certain medical challenges, ritzoni mutar l'chachila, that it is definitely mutar l'chachila to do PGD. So here's, and then the next piece, by the way, is an article on tradition that I wrote on the issue, where I did not make the same mistake in the womb thing as I did right here. And that is that, or I made it in the court. So the bottom line is that here is where the thing seems to be. This notion of PGD is something that halakhically seems to be an issue that's being discussed. There are those that say, everybody seems to suggest that when it comes to an issue of a couple not having certain children that have certain children having ailments that they define as challenges, that it's 100% permitted to do PGD. The question now becomes, when you want to basically decide that you want to have male children or female children, either for the mitzvah or revu or for other reasons, there it's not so simple you're allowed to do this or not. Many poskim say that it's 100% permitted in order to decide whether you want to have male or female children. And many suggest that, hey, that is the line that you should not be crossing. And I would remind all of us that it's interesting that we're told in the Gemara that after 120 years, we're asked a few different shilas, a few different questions. The Gemara in Shabbos and Daf Lamed Aleph tells us, you know, were you concerned about Tzipita Yeshua? Were you concerned about the redemption of the Jewish people? One of the other questions that it asks is, Asakta b'Piriyah v'Rivya. Now, notice the language of the Gemara there. It says Asakta. Asakta means, were you involved? It doesn't say Kiyamta. Did you fulfill the mitzvah peruvru? It says Asakta. Did you try your best? I'm not sure that the definition of trying your best requires PGD. Right? I think that's way past Asakta. Right? And I think it's important to recognize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu asks us to make our Ashtablos, but only up to a point. It would seem to me, and there are great poskim who what they forgot I will never know, who say that it is permitted to do PGD when you have to have male or female children to be yotzei the mitzvah peruvu. Great poskim. I personally have an issue with that. I think that when you start using PGD for anything other than medical challenges, I think you cross a line. I think there you start to be involved in the domain of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not ask us for Kiyamta Purufu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu asks us for Asakta for Purufu. It's not our mandate to have male or female children if we've tried and we don't have male or female children. It's not even halachically necessary to use these heroic measures in order to have children. And that's up to the couple. It's not halachically required that a couple do IVF to be able to have children. It's up to the couple if they want to use these procedures. But what I think is clear is that halacha is grappling with this issue. This is not an issue that's been discussed for 100 years. It's been discussed for 100 months or less. It's a new cutting-edge issue, and it is a serious halachic issue because the capacity to use science to be able to choreograph families is found in every fertility clinic in the world, and it's an issue that challenges poskim. So what we've seen is the destruction of the fertilized egg when it's not in the womb does not seem to be a significant halachic challenge. It's not something that we do en masse, but it doesn't seem to be a significant halachic challenge. The challenge here is more found in the fifth volume of the Shulchan Aruch than in the four volumes of the Shulchan Aruch. And that is, where does man's role begin and end, and where does HaKadosh Baruch Hu's role begin and end? So when it comes to issues of medical ailments, it seems that all the poskim, even Rav Neuwirth, who is very concerned about this, but says, by the way, check Rav Shlomo Zalman, he left the door open. But there are those poskim that say, hey, even to create to the mitzvah of Puravu, it's permitted to do PGD. And there are many poskim that say, there's where the line gets drawn. Asakta is the norm, not Kiyamta. And so I think it's important for us to realize that this is a celebration of what Torah is all about. Kihim chayenu varech yameinu. The idea that Torah, using the principles that have been given to us from Moshe, has created paradigms for us to embrace these issues. It's not black and white. It doesn't need to be black and white. It is an issue that is still a little foggy, but clearly there is a path that halacha is going on. And if I gave this year in 5 or 6 years from now, there would be better clarity on the topic, better consensus on the topic. But we're at the cusp of this issue, and we're dealing with it for the first time in an unmasked situation, and therefore it's important to realize that various poskim chart different opinions, and I don't think at this point there's any consensus on it, other than I think it's 100% permitted when it's dealing with medical challenges. Thank you.
Just take a few minute break before we have Rabbi Liebtag begin.